is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
Zhang Zemin is dead. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, joins me as my colleague and co-host, just returned from Asia. And we're joined by our colleague, Jonathan Ward, author of China's Vision of Victory. Jonathan, Zhang Zemin, former general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, dead at 96. The question that puzzles me, is there a ceremony in the Chinese Communist Party, as there is in many sovereignties, crown sovereignties, throughout the last 2,000 years, starting with Rome, of making political statements at the funeral of a former leader or the former king? Good evening to you, Jonathan.
Good evening, John. It's a very interesting question because since the founding of the People's Republic of China, figureheads, the leaders of this nation have meant very different things, and their deaths have meant very different things. So when we think about the end of Mao Zedong, I mean, that was a moment in which China could change course and pursue, a sort of counterpoint to Mao's disastrous rule. And that was certainly the intention of leadership at that time. But since then, Deng Xiaoping was obviously a very important figure that was celebrated and canonized, and all of them are celebrated and canonized in their way. But here, with the death of Jiang Zemin, in, I think, a very tenuous moment for Xi Jinping, with the most significant protests in China in since 1989, and then also with such an ambitious program, which he has on his own agenda, and one which requires, as he sees it, the consolidation of China around his vision. He is certainly using this moment to, as many have said, to demand unity from the country, to double down on the path forward, and then also to bring up some very interesting things, which, Gordon, I'd be interested in your take on this, but this just is never done. I mean, here in his speech eulogizing Jiang Zemin, he says, in the late spring, he brings up the 1989 protests. Full force, which I think is extremely rare. He says, in the late spring and early summer of 1989, a severe political disturbance took place in China. Comrade Jiang Zemin resolutely upheld and implemented the CPC Central Committee's correct decision on taking a clear stand against the turmoil, defending China's socialist state power, and safeguarding the fundamental interests of the people. So he's using Jiang as an example of crushing, going along with the party's will to crush dissent. And Zhang himself was obviously someone who presided over some really horrific things from the vantage point of human rights. I mean, not only the crackdowns in Shanghai that were part of the broader crackdowns in 1989, but the Falun Gong, the mass organ harvesting, a patriotic education program, which in the aftermath of Tiananmen Square sought to teach young people in China about the external enemies, Japan, America, the West. I mean, that's the sort of thing that people like myself would encounter in my generation as they were taught by the party's sort of revised take on history. And then one other thing that I think is important with Jiang Zemin is the two centenaries, the guideposts for forward-looking outbound Communist Party grand strategy, were first announced in his work report to the Party Congress in 1997. So that's where 2049, the idea that by mid-century, China would complete its rejuvenation. That's really the beginning of that in use by a Chinese leader, but that's continuous from Mao's vision of a new China, Xi Jinping's vision of China completing this great rejuvenation. So in that sense, all the canonization, all the eulogization is part of one big push by the party to sort of find its commonalities and move forward. And they do, in that sense, act as one, even when there are factional fights, I think, in the near term and nearer term events.
Gordon, you have a question for Jonathan.
Jonathan, there's some irony here. Jiang Zemin came to prominence because he handled the Tiananmen protests in Shanghai and defused them. And yet we hear from Xi Jinping's speech, which you've just talked about, that Jiang Zemin was resolute in defending the party, which sounded to me like a reference to Deng Xiaoping's use of the People's Liberation Army to kill protesters in China, specifically Beijing. It would seem to me that if someone was a keen student of history, that they would say that Zhang's example really undercuts what Xi Jinping was trying to say rather than supports it. But I guess there are many interpretations that one could make of Xi Jinping's speech and Jiang Zemin's career. How do you sort of sort all of that out?
Well, I think that's sort of what's going on here, Gordon, exactly, is he's trying to fold it under the official history of the party as he sees it, and as, you know, in his own work reports and telling, and the party's, you know, sort of use of history is so important to its existence. So I think putting Zhang into the place that he wants him, and to say that he was part of this, he went along with what was necessary. You're right. I mean, there's a distortion there. And at the same time, that's sort of what happens. It's how they bring the past in line with the present in order to control the future. So in that sense, it's a very, you know, when one looks at the nuances of it, it's there's a metaphorical thing going on there that's quite right for communist China.
Jonathan, you identify Jiang Zemin's legacy in the Chinese Communist Party. Very much sounds like he's remembered as a brute. The young people born after Tiananmen, they're now on the streets protesting Xi. Is this all available to them? Do they understand what Zhang was associated with, organ harvesting and brutality about 1989?
Well, I'm not sure that they do, because, I mean, certainly many of those things are not, you know, the common view, certainly among young people in China. I mean, to look at the human rights abuses, and I mean, another aspect of Xi Jinping's speech was he continuously referred to people of all ethnicities in China, despite the genocide going on. And I think Jiang Zemin's, you know, Tibet in the 90s was not a good thing, and neither was Xinjiang. I mean, that was happening under his rule. So that sort of consistency, I think, is not, you know, I'm not sure that's the view that young people take of their leaders yet. And if that's changing, I mean, that would be one of the most significant aspects of these protests, if they begin to really genuinely view these leaders differently.
Would Jiang Zemin's conduct be news to the people protesting on those iPhone videos?
It's a very good question, John. I'm not sure.
Gordon, I ask you, would this all be fresh information? Jonathan mentions Tibet. We knew that Hu Jintao was rewarded. Wasn't he the brute of Tibet before he became the general secretary? So we're looking at a common theme here. The brutality raises you up in the party. Do the young people know this, Gordon?
I think that some of them might know it, especially if they've studied abroad. But most people in China wouldn't. I mean, the party indoctrination doesn't refer to the brutality in Tibet. It refers to lifting Tibet up. And so there's a very different spin put on all of this. And, you know, with Jiang Zemin, at least during Zhang's tenure, he was portraying himself as a reformer, at least an economic reformer. Hu Jintao, his successor, he tried to sort of blot out Jiang Zemin, as is typical for all successors in Communist Party history. I think that essentially your elite in Beijing would see Zhang as a reformer, and the brutality would just be taken for granted, so they wouldn't comment on it.
Jonathan, final 30 seconds, right? Xi Jinping, who's his audience for that speech? Is it domestic? Is it the party? Is it the world?
I think it's all of the above. I mean, it will be read certainly around the world, but it will certainly be heard throughout China. And there, he's very consistent, I think. Whenever he speaks on a occasion that he certainly views as important, he's clear about laying out the past, the present, and the future in a very consistent way. So I think that is the message at home, is that they, you know, come together so we can forge forward and into the future in ways that are absolutely and remain absolutely dangerous,
Jonathan,
for the United States and the rest of the
Jonathan
world.
Jonathan Ward, author of China's Vision of Victory, Gordon Chang, I'm John Batchelor.